This is a reading of the Arizona Daily Star for Wednesday, August 27, 2025. My name is Mark DeGroft with you here on Thun Sounds of Arizona. Tucson Electric Power and the developer of Project Blue want state regulators to approve an agreement to provide electricity to the data center complex at its originally proposed site, leading County Supervisor Andre Cano to charge that they're trying to bypass our community will. TEP and developer Beale Infrastructure asked the Arizona Corporation Commission in a filing on Monday to approve an agreement that would provide 286 megawatts of power to a data center complex that would be built near the Pima County Fairgrounds, nearly 20% less power than was previously proposed. The agreement leaves the door open for TEP to provide an additional 64 megawatts if the utility can find and buy that power, which would bring the total back up to the 350 megawatts that was originally proposed for Project Blue's first phase. But the return of Project Blue, nearly 3 weeks after the Tucson City Council voted unanimously on August 6th not to proceed with it, leaves a key question unanswered. Where will the water we needed to cool the data centers come from? Beale declined to respond on Tuesday to questions about its planned water resources. Beale had said before the Tucson Council's August 6th vote to not proceed with the project that it would pay the city to have an 18-mile pipeline built to deliver reclaimed water to its data center. But that opinion is clearly off the table for now, with the council now on record as opposing the project. That would leave the San Francisco-based Peel with several choices. First, it could drill wells at its property to extract water. Second, it could buy water from some other source, including the municipal providers or private water companies. Third, it could switch to less thirsty technology that would rely on air cooling the data centers instead of cooling them with water. Since the city council voted on August 6th, Tucson officials have not been contacted about providing water service to Project Blue at the location named in the TEP filing on Monday. City Manager Tim Thormier said on Tuesday that the city has ceased all work on the project as directed by the mayor and the council. Various sources, including Pima County Supervisor Jennifer Allen, told the Star on Tuesday that they believe Project Blue will choose the air-cooled route. But Beale officials, responding to questions from the Star about their plans, issued a five-paragraph statement that briefly discussed the water's history, the project's history, and its future energy supply, but said nothing about the water. Cano said in a social media post Monday night that the application amounts to corporate collusion between our region's main energy utility and an out-of-state shell company seeking to deplete our energy and water in southern Arizona. From Phoenix, there's nothing wrong with the system used to classify the security risk of Arizona prison inmates, even if it did result in one prisoner being able to kill three fellow inmates at the Tucson facility in April, the head of the state's prison system told lawmakers yesterday. Ryan Thornell acknowledged that Randy Wassenaar had his custody reduced from maximum security to close custody late last year, despite the fact that he was serving 16 life terms for a 2004 incident in which he and a fellow inmate took and held hostages at the state prison for 15 days. And Thornell said none of that changed, despite the fact that Wassenaar had boasted earlier this year of having killed his cellmate. There is no hard evidence Wassenaar was involved in that death, but the official autopsy report showing that the cause was inconclusive, Thornell said. But the questions about the April triple homicide were just an entry point for members of a special legislative panel to air concerns about whether Thornell, handpicked in 2023 by Governor Katie Hobbs to run the state prison system that houses more than 35,000 inmates, is qualified to do the job. This committee's role is not to dwell on blame, but to examine what went wrong, why it went wrong, and what must be done to prevent such failures from happening again, said Representative Guanyin Nguyen in Republican Prescott Valley, who co-chairs the special panel that was formed specifically to look at prison security. And Senator Kevin Payne, Republican out of Peoria, the other co-chair, said he wants answers to thousands of inmates being downgraded into lower custody levels, officers being assaulted at alarming rates, inmate homicides reaching record highs, and a mismanaged medication assistance program that appears to lack any safeguards to assure its effectiveness and efficiency. The hearing featured several former staffers, including people who had been wardens and employed for decades, who told lawmakers that Thornell is not up to the job. Travis Scott set out that Hobbs plucked him from Maine, where he was running a prison system 5 times smaller than the one here. Scott told lawmakers the prison system has always had high staff turnover, but he said that under Thornell's tenure, it's gotten dangerous with more assaults on staff. Stacey Ibarra cited the fact that there have been 9 homicides in Arizona prisons so far this calendar year, more than any other full year, and Rodney Carr said there has been a particular rise in violence in those close custody yards. All that goes to the issue of why Wassenaar was placed in that classification. Thornell acknowledged Wassenaar's conviction and 16 life sentences due to a 2004 hostage incident. After that, Wassenaar was shipped to out-of-state prisons, the most recent being New Mexico, before being returned to Arizona in 2018. He told lawmakers there are no records from that state of behavior problems. Thornell said Wassenaar originally was classified for maximum custody, and that means 23 hours a day in a cell and escorted everywhere by staffers. In March of 2024, however, he was reduced to close custody. That means being able to socialize with other inmates in the yard, with Thornell saying that he matched the expectations based on his behavior. As part of the transition, Wassenaar was not given a cellmate, and when he was, the other person died. Wassenaar boasted that he had strangled him, but Thornell said that's not what the medical evidence showed, and so Wassenaar was left where he was. So why, asked Representative Neil Carter, Republican Santan Valley, would Wassenaar make that claim? Mr. Wassenaar has shown repeatedly, especially in the last several months, that he wants to get as much credit, fame, and claim as he can, Thornell said. But the director said that even that did not cause him to believe that Wassenaar should be placed back in maximum security. What is the issue, said Thornell, is the inmate's overall behavior and over what period. More to the point, the director said, none of what happened can be laid at his feet. A lot of people claim that I came in and changed the classification policy and process, he told lawmakers. I did not do that, he said. What we did here is follow the classification policy and process that's been in place for, I think, more than 15 years now, and maybe even more than that. There are constitutional issues, and he said that it makes no sense to keep somebody locked up like that all day, given that at some point they're going to get released. And going from maximum security to total freedom, Mr. Thornell said, is not a good transition. In Phoenix, a powerful storm kicked up a towering wall of dust that rode through Metro Phoenix on Monday, darkening the sky, blinding drivers, knocking out power, and grounding lights at one of the nation's busiest airports. Phoenix, a powerful storm kicked up a towering wall of dust that rode through Metro Phoenix on Monday, darkening the sky, blinding drivers, knocking out power, and grounding flights at one of the nation's busiest airports. Brene Boykin Heitzman was driving her son and daughters, age 9 and 11, home from school when the storm, which is known as a boob, arrived late in the afternoon in Arizona City, about 60 miles southeast of Phoenix. She had to quickly pull over as the storm engulfed her car. I couldn't see my hand in front of my face if I put my hand outside, she said. Boykin Reisman said she could taste the dust and feel the strong wind rafting her car, and it finally passed about 15 minutes later. I was nervous, she said. My kids were really, really scared, so I was trying to be brave for them. A haboob is a dust storm pushed by the wind produced by a weather front or a thunderstorm. It typically occurs in flat, arid areas. Heavy rain and wind followed Monday's haboob, delaying flights at Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport and causing some damage to a terminal roof. Crews have been identifying leaks and attempting to clean up water where it is collected in passenger areas. Heather Schellbrack, the airport's deputy aviation director for public relations, said in an email, more than 15,000 people lost power, most in Maricopa County, which includes Phoenix, according to Power Outage Us. Richard Filey, a retired university professor who lives in Gilbert, said the dust storm caused the trees to sway and knocked bird feeders to the ground. Fine dust found its way through every little crack in space and into his house, he said. The windstorm part of it, I'm glad it's gone, he said. You look at the photos of haboobs and they are a spectacular natural phenomenon. They're kind of beautiful in their own way. Phoenix has been drier than usual during the monsoon season, while parts of the southeast and north-central Arizona have had a fair amount of rain, said Mark O'Malley, who is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Phoenix. But that's typical for a monsoon, very hit and miss, he said. Golden reported from reports from Seattle, the AP and writer Felicia Ferretska contributed from Flagstaff, Arizona. Katie Shaw lost her court challenge to contest the results of the Democratic primary election against incumbent Kevin Dahl, but a recount will still occur. Pima County Superior Court Judge Wayne Yelling ruled Monday against Shaw's request to throw out the results of the August 5th primary election, redo the primary, and pause the printing of the November 5th general election ballots until the challenge was resolved. A redo of the primary election would cost at least $350,000, Tucson City Clerk Suzanne Messick said on Monday in court, and under state statute, if another primary election had to happen, it likely wouldn't happen until March of 2026, delaying the general election for Ward 3 to May of next year, she said. Shaw, who is a Tucson Unified School District Governing Board member, argued that the ballot mishap that occurred ahead of the primary election disenfranchised 76 potential voters in Tucson's Ward 3. In late July, the Pima County Recorder's Office said that it sent nearly 1,300 Tucson voters a ballot for the wrong political party ahead of the August 5th primary election. The office later said that the ballot mistake caused by the office sending incorrect voter data to the Tucson City Clerk's Office ahead of ballots being printed actually affected 358 voters. Ward 3's Democratic primary was the closest race among the primary races that were held earlier this month for three seats on the Tucson City Council. Dahl's slim margin of victory triggered an automatic recount. The recount was originally scheduled for last week, but it was postponed until Shaw's challenge was resolved. After the hearing, Messi said her hope is to have the recount begin on Wednesday, but it will first have to be signed off by the judge who originally vacated the recount's court hearing. Jim Barton, a lawyer for Shaw, argued on Monday that of those 76 voters, 18 were registered Democrats who received a ballot for a different party, while the remaining 58 voters were independents who received Democratic ballots by mistake. Barton argued that it was too much to ask the voters to understand the communications they received from the recorder's office, disregard the ballot they received, and request a new ballot in time for the election, or go to Vote Center in person on election day to vote a replacement ballot. Assistant City Attorney Dennis McLaughlin, representing the city attorney's office, argued that those voters were given the opportunity to exercise their right but didn't take it. He said the city clerk's office and the recorder's office acknowledged the mistake was made, but it was on the voters to take the initiative, but they simply chose not to vote. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. has ordered Kerry Lake and two others to sit for depositions dealing with the shuttering of the Voice of America network that she has overseen for the Trump administration. U.S. District Judge Joyce Lamberth handed down an August 25th order that suggests the questions under oath are one final opportunity, short of a contempt trial, to explain why Lake's U.S. Agency for Global Media has effectively defied his April order to restore Voice of America's programming. He said the depositions must be conducted by September 15th. Lambert's effort to enforce his temporary injunction against Lake and the Agency for Global Media extended a legal showdown over a near-term operations of VOA, which essentially went dark on March 15th after 83 years on the air. Frank Bucco, a contributor to the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 report, is ordered to be deposed along with Laili Soltani, who headed the VOA's Persian language division that covered Iran. Bucco is a conservative former talk show host who promoted the birther conspiracy involving former President Barack Obama and is credited in the 920-page Project 2025 report for help on the chapter critical of the USAGM and its organizations that include the VOA. The report said USAGM's firewall preventing editorial oversight of its media organizations has allowed them to join the mainstream media's anti-U.S. course and denigrating the American story, all in the name of so-called journalistic independence. Lamberth, who was appointed to his seat by President Ronald Reagan, has held that Trump and Lake overstepped their authority by shutting down VOA and Radio Free Europe by withholding funding from organizations Congress chose to fund for the federal budget year. The U.S. Court of Appeals for Washington, D.C. sided with Lake that Trump had such power over the organizations under the executive branch of government. Even so, Lambert wrote that his order to have VOA provide news remains in effect. Lake didn't say VOA was completely shut down during the August 25th interview with conservative Real America's Voice. Instead, she cast it as a meeting statutory minimums on foreign language broadcasts. We're in the process of right-sizing this agency, not growing it. I've trimmed and cut a lot of the staff and workforce, and we're scaling things back, Lake said. Turning to law and order briefs, Tucson police are investigating the deadly shooting this weekend of a man who lived in an encampment. At about 11:45 p.m. on Saturday, Matthew Eric Zimmerman, 56 years old, was shot in a wash near the 900 block of South Warren Avenue near East Aviation Parkway and East 18th Street, Tucson police said in a news release. Zimmerman died at the scene. He had been living in the wash with a female companion. In the shooting, a gunman walked into the camp and shot Zimmerman. Anybody with information is asked to call 88 Crime, the anonymous tip line. A driver was arrested in suspicion of second-degree murder after Tucson police say he smashed his pickup truck that had pulled out over to do a flat tire, killing a man that was sitting beside the disabled vehicle. At about 3 a.m. on Saturday, Mark William Hafner, 64 years old, pulled into the right shoulder of East Aviation Parkway, just east of the Keno Parkway overpass, after the 1998 Toyota Tacoma he was driving got a flat tire, police said in a news release. While Hafner was sitting inside the Toyota, the driver of a bronze 2008 Chevrolet Avalanche, Carlos Samaniego Jr., swerved into the lane and smashed into the Toyota. Hafner was killed in the crash. Samaniego, 34 years old, was later determined to be impaired, the release said. He was booked into the Pima County Jail, and the crash is still under investigation. Turning to the business section of this morning's paper, Southwest Airlines is changing its longstanding policy for plus-size passengers that will begin next year. Starting January 27th of 2026, the same day Southwest will begin offering assigned seating on flights, customers who encroach upon the neighboring seats should buy the number of seats they need prior to traveling if they want to secure the seat next to them, the airline said on its website. However, the airline, which is headquartered at Dallas's Love Field, may not offer those customers a refund as it has done in the past. Southwest said that in order for plus-size customers to receive a refund, three conditions must be met. The flight must depart with at least one open seat or with passengers flying with space-available passes. Both seats should be purchased in the same fare class, and the refund request must be made within 90 days of the travel date. Previously, passengers who needed it could book an extra seat on a Southwest flight and get a refund after they traveled, or could arrive at the airport, request an extra seat at the gate if there was space, be offered one at no extra cost. Southwest said it would no longer offer pre-boarding to plus-size passengers, instead requiring them to board in their assigned group. It is the latest sweeping change that has eliminated multiple popular long-standing policies as the carrier looks to generate more revenue. Other changes include charging for checked baggage, introducing new fare types, and offering assigned seating and premium seating similar to the other major carriers. When the new policy takes effect, Southwest passengers who show up at the airport and need an extra seat will be required to buy one at the rate for that day. If one isn't available, they will be rebooked on another flight. Plus-size passengers who purchase fares that do not allow them to select assigned seating should contact Southwest as soon as possible after booking so that the airline can assist them. Southwest said it will not assign seats to other members if a passenger's party if the fare does not include that. In a statement regarding the change, Chris Perry, a spokesperson for Southwest, said, "We are updating many policies as we prepare our operation, employees, and customers for assigned seating on January 27, 2026. To ensure space, we are communicating to customers who have previously used the extra seat policy they should purchase it at booking." Seattle investors have bought three multifamily complexes in central Tucson, including one with vacant land for future development. IPM Investments bought the 150-unit Royal Elkhorn at 3660 East 3rd Street and the 9-unit Villa Elkhorn Casitas at East 4th Street, both in the Miramonte neighborhood. It also bought Royal Palms Apartments, a 136-unit complex at 5201 East 2nd Street near East Speedway and North Rosemont Boulevard. The Villa Elkhorn property includes a 2.8-acre vacant site zoned for multifamily development. The portfolio, developed in the 1960s, sold for $16 million. Jeff Casper with CBRE Tucson represented the seller, Desert Ventures LLC. "We're excited to acquire these opportunistic multifamily communities for our expanding portfolio, and we look forward to adding value to the properties for our residents and investors alike," said IPM Management's founder, Frank Horning. "Tucson has an excellent underlying multifamily fundamentals, and we are bullish on the region's future growth." Some other local commercial activity includes the La Madera Casitas LLC, bought La Madera Apartments, an 8-unit complex at 3001 East La Madera Drive from Madera Group for $1 million. Boot Barn Western and Workwear leased 20,175 square feet at Madera Marketplace, which is at 18680 South Nogales Highway, from TNG Green Valley LP. TVI Incorporated, doing business as Green Drop, leased two new Tucson spaces to accept donated items for its nonprofit partners. The organization leased 1,208 square feet at the Tucson Place Shopping Center, which is located at 405 East Wetmore Road, and 2.135 square feet at 6383 East Grant Road. The landlord, Larson Bakers, was represented by its broker, Isaac Figueroa and Trent McCullough. And Color Me Mine, a ceramics paint shop, leased 1,750 square feet of retail space at Oracle Wetmore Shopping Center, the address 4386 North Oracle Road, from Acacia Tucson LLC. And the Villa Elkhorn Casitas property in the Miramont neighborhood sold as part of a three-property portfolio to Seattle investors. Looking at letters to the editor, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's plan to occupy Gaza and Israel's present military actions, as well as destruction of infrastructure that has reduced the region to rubble, have made U.S. taxpayers complicit with famine and with targeting civilians as war policy. Given these factors, I think that the U.S. must cut off all weapons and aid to Israel, including delivery of defensive weapons, until Israel lives inside its boundaries and abides by international standards. Yes, a vicious atrocity against Israeli settlers occurred on August 7th of 2023, but Israel has the ability to respond selectively, as it did, albeit illegally, with Mordecai Vanunu in 1986. No need to eradicate civilians and a distinct culture in Gaza, though. I fear that this is the actual intent. Almost three millennia ago, the prophet Isaiah delivered his warning to Israel, though you may make many prayers, I will not listen. Your hands are full of blood. That is written by Ela Abernathy from Midtown. Jacqueline Marshall from Oral Valley writes, if you too are struggling with the daily onslaught of bad news that comes out of D.C., there are steps each of us can take to alleviate our anxieties, stem the tide, and resist despair. Look for community groups and organizations that are already well organized and offer a variety of events and activities for everybody. Join one or more of them and participate in the programs they have to offer, from showing up in person at protests, town halls and voter registration drives, to stay-at-home activities such as making phone calls, writing postcards and letters to the editor, creating informative flyers, and volunteering your unique talents in any number of ways. Every positive action you take, no matter how small, will help make a difference while keeping your feelings of fear, anxiety, and despair at bay. Again, Jacqueline Marshall from Oral Valley. James Abels from Midtown writes that August 25th, Bill O'Brien cites the Crime Prevention Research Center to crime statistics to support part of his opinion. Media bias fact check lists CPRC as right but not extreme. Generally, local authorities should seek help when they deem appropriate, and the federal government should help as constrained by locals, generally. Sharon Goodberry wrote of a similar position regarding crime in major cities. The FBI statistics show crime has been in a decline since COVID. To reduce crime, the Fed should appropriate resources to all major cities. Inappropriately trained military personnel are not optimal. The Fifth Amendment states, nor shall any person be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process. The text says any person, not any citizen or resident alien. To alter the Fifth requires passing an amendment by Congress and ratification by the states, usually, Article V of the Constitution. Again, James Abels from Midtown. And Maggie Kraft from the Northside writes, placing unqualified candidates in essential government positions continues to cause great harm to America. The Dragon Bravo wildfire is just one example. Without the best and brightest experts protecting us from both domestic and foreign threats, our country will continue to decline. The top scientists, military personnel, economists, medical professionals, environmentalists, researchers, etc., are critical for our national security. As American citizens, we must demand our elected officials confirm only the most qualified experts for these critical government positions. We must also communicate to them that if unqualified candidates are confirmed, we, the people, have the power to vote for better representation in the future. Again, Maggie Kraft from the North Side. And Steven Saltonstall from the East Side writes, President Trump has stated that he soon will be sending the National Guard to patrol other U.S. cities, including Chicago. Today, by new executive order, he directed that the National Guard troops of every state, be resourced, trained, and organized in quelling civil disturbances. And to that end, he created a National Standing Guard Quick Reaction Force for rapid nationwide deployment. Trump has thus laid the groundwork for martial law on a national scale. As Illinois Governor Pritzker warned us in a speech today, Trump's aim is to end elections and become an authoritarian dictator. Trump is well on the way to accomplishing that unconstitutional and un-American goal. Tom of Throth from the Foothills writes, I'm sure most of your readers are as shocked as I was to read about the staff salaries at the U of A football department. This was a good piece of reporting and very informative as to the amount of money being spent. I'm sure everyone works hard, but some of these must be dream jobs. Combined coaches' salaries are $8 million, and the five strength and conditioning coaches total almost $800,000. The total budget is over $11 million. This seems like an awful lot of money for me to just get a middling college sports program. Oh, and don't forget to add another 20% for employee-related expenses like retirement, health insurance, and taxes. Again, Thomas Roth from the Foothills. Turning to national and world news, from Miami, the U.S. Coast Guard said this week that it seized more than 75,000 pounds of illegal drugs this summer from boats far out to sea in the Pacific and Caribbean, which the service called its largest ever haul, worth nearly $500 million. The Coast Guard worked with the Department of Defense on these seizures, catching 19 drug-carrying vessels off of the Galapagos Islands of Ecuador, the coast of Venezuela, Mexico, the Dominican Republic, Jamaica, and Aruba, the Coast Guard said. Some of the vessels were spotted by Maritime Patrol aircraft before being intercepted and searched by boarding teams. The Coast Guard said 34 suspected drug traffickers were detained, but authorities didn't specify the total number of suspects detained. The Coast Guard cutter Hamilton offloaded the combined 76,140 pounds of drugs at Port Everglades, Florida on Monday, including about 61,740 pounds of cocaine and about 14,400 pounds of marijuana seized by multiple vessels. The agency estimated the drug street value at about $473 million. The Trump administration promised to overhaul the Coast Guard, which is part of the Department of Homeland Security, increasing the service's fleet and boosting its military workforce by at least 15,000 by the end of fiscal year 2028. The Coast Guard has more than 43,000 active duty members, 8,000 reservists, and 30,000 auxiliary members. From Providence, Rhode Island, a Rhode Island state prosecutor was put on unpaid leave for 6 months after she was captured on police body camera footage, warning one of the officers who were arresting her on a trespassing charge that he was going to regret it, in quotes. Special Assistant Attorney General Devon Flanagan received the punishment Monday. It stemmed from her August 14th a trespassing arrest outside of a restaurant in Newport, the state attorney general, Peter Nero, said on Tuesday. We hold our attorneys to the highest personal and professional standards, and Ms. Flanagan plainly did not meet those standards here, Nerona said in a news release. Said on Monday he met with the officers involved in Flanagan's arrest and apologized, said Tim Rondeau, who is the spokesman for the attorney general's office. Flanagan also sent apology letters to the individual officers. Flanagan and a friend were arrested after they were asked to leave the Clark Cookhouse and refused, according to police. The police footage shows Flanagan asking an officer multiple times to turn off his body camera and then repeatedly saying, I'm an AG. It shows the officers approaching someone from the restaurant and asking if they want them trespassed. The person clasps his hands and responds, saying, trespass, yeah, cuff them, please. When the officer says Flanagan and people who are with her are trespassing, she responds, we're not trespassing. You haven't notified us that we're trespassing. What did I just say to you? You're trespassing, said the officer, who is not identified in the video. I'm an AG, Flanagan later says. Good for you, the officer says. Eventually, Flanagan is put in a patrol vehicle and says, buddy, you're going to regret this. You're going to regret it. In Rhode Island, a conviction for misdemeanor willful trespass is punishable by up to a year in jail, a fine of $1,000 or both. It's unclear whether, if convicted, Flanagan would still be able to work in the Attorney General's office. In his statement announcing Flanagan was placed on leave, Nerona said that he hopes she reflects on the seriousness of her conduct and makes corrective changes in her life. She has a long road ahead of her, but I believe that in the long run, our worst moments can inspire us to become better people, he said. According to the Attorney General's office, Flanagan has worked for the state's top legal office for nearly 7 years and was assigned to the Criminal Division's appellate court at the time of her arrest. Looking at the digest for today, out of Washington, a watchdog investigation into former special counsel Jack Smith over his prosecutions of President Donald Trump is based on an imaginary and unfounded premise, Smith's lawyers wrote in a letter that was obtained on Tuesday by the Associated Press. The letter marks the first response by Smith and his legal team to news that the Office of Special Counsel, an independent watchdog office, launched an investigation into whether Smith engaged in proper political activity through his criminal inquiries into Trump. The attorneys told Jameson Greer, the acting head of his office, that his investigation into Smith was wholly without merit. From Ramallah, West Bank, Israeli officers carried out a rare daytime raid on Tuesday, yesterday, in the heart of the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah, where the Palestinian Authority is headquartered. Dozens of Palestinians were wounded, according to local medics, as people were throwing stones scattered after gunfire and tear gas were used. Israel claimed it targeted money exchanges linked to Hamas, but the raid was likely to further undermine the internationally recognized Palestinian Authority as it seeks to capitalize on the recent decision by some Western countries to recognize Palestinian statehood. The Palestinian Authority, which is led by rivals of Hamas, did not immediately comment on the raid. It cooperates with Israel on security matters and exercises limited autonomy in parts of the West Bank. More than 300 million American Social Security data was put at risk after Department of Government Efficiency officials uploaded sensitive information to a cloud account that was not subject to oversight. This according to a whistleblower disclosure on Tuesday. From Pennsylvania, a federal appeals court ruled yesterday that it is unconstitutional for the presidential battleground state of Pennsylvania to throw out mail-in ballots simply because the voter didn't write an accurate date on the return envelope. Pennsylvania activist Heather Honey, a conservative election researcher whose faulty findings on voter data were cited by President Donald Trump as he tried to overturn his 2020 election loss, was appointed to an election integrity role at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Neither Honey or DHS immediately responded to requests for comment yesterday. AT&T will spend $23 billion to acquire certain wireless spectrum licenses from EchoStar, a significant expansion of AT&T's low and mid-band coverage networks. AT&T said Tuesday, the licenses cover virtually every United States market, more than 400 total, which the company plans to deploy to lure home more home internet subscribers. A German court convicted a boy 16 years old on Tuesday of supporting a foiled plot to attack Taylor Swift concerts in Austria last year. The Syrian national, whom prosecutors identified only as Mohammed A., was convicted of preparing a serious act of violence and supporting a terrorist act abroad. And heavy rain fell Tuesday in parts of Southeast Asia after a tropical storm made landfall in Vietnam, causing at least 4 deaths, damage to homes, and flooding in the capital and its coastal areas. California, Washington, and New Mexico could lose millions of dollars in federal funding if they continue not to enforce English language requirements for truckers, Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said yesterday. An investigation launched after a deadly Florida crash involving a foreign truck driver who made an illegal U-turn on August 12th found what Duffy called significant failures in the way all 3 states enforce rules that took effect in June after one of Trump's executive orders. Truckers are supposed to be disqualified if they can't demonstrate English proficiency. Duffy said the driver involved in the crash that killed 3 should not have been given a commercial's license because of his immigration status. But the crash is becoming increasingly political, with the governors of California and Florida criticizing each other and Duffy highlighting the Trump administration's immigration concerns in interviews. Duffy said Tuesday that it's a safety issue, not a political one, because truckers need to understand road signs and must be able to communicate with law enforcement. Washington, Americans' view of the United States economy declined modestly in August, as anxiety over a weakening job market grew for the eighth straight month. The Conference Board said on Tuesday its consumer confidence index ticked down by 1.3 points to 97.4 in August, down from July's 98.7, but in the same narrow range of the past 3 months. The small decline in confidence was in line with the forecasts of most of the economists that were surveyed. A measure of American short-term expectations for their income, business conditions, and the job market fell by 1.2 points to 74.8, remaining significantly below 80, the marker that can signal a recession is ahead. Consumers' assessments of their current economic situation also fell modestly to 131.2 in August from 132.8 in July. And while the employment and layoffs remain historically low, there has been noticeable deterioration in the labor market this year and mounting evidence that people are having difficulty in finding jobs. The Conference Board's report said references to high prices and inflation increased again and were often mentioned. From New York, a posthumous and unsparing memoir by one of Jeffrey Epstein's most prominent accusers, Virginia Roberts Giuffre, will be published this fall, publishing house Alfred A. Knopf said on Sunday. Nobody's Girl, a memoir of surviving abuse and fighting for justice, is scheduled for release on October 21st, the publisher confirmed to the Associated Press. Giuffre, who died by suicide in April at the age of 41, was working on Nobody's Girl with author journalist Amy Wallace and completed the manuscript for the 400-page book, according to Knopf. The publisher's statement before her death, saying that it was her heartfelt wish that the memoir be released, regardless of the circumstances. The content of this book is crucial as it aims to shed light on the systemic failures that allow the trafficking of vulnerable individuals across borders, the email reads. It is imperative that the truth is understood and that these issues surrounding this topic are addressed both for the sake of justice and for awareness. Giuffre was hospitalized following a serious accident on March 24th, Knopf said, and sent the email on April 1st. She passed away on April 25th. In the event of my passing, I would like to ensure that Nobody's Girl is still released. I believe it has the potential to impact many lives and foster necessary discussions about these grave injustices, she wrote to Wallace. In 2023, the New York Post reported that Giuffre reached a deal believed to be worth millions of dollars with an undisclosed publisher. Knopf spokesman Todd Dowdy said she initially agreed to a seven-figure contract with Penguin Press, but moved with acquiring editor Emily Cunningham after Knopf hired Cunningham as executive editor last year. Giuffre stated that often that in the 2000s, when she was a teenager, she was caught up in Epstein's sex trafficking ring and exploited by Britain's Prince Andrew and other influential men. Epstein was found dead in a New York City jail cell in 2019 in what investigators have described as a suicide. His former girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell, was convicted in late 2021 on sex trafficking and other charges. Andrew denied Giuffre's allegations. In 2022, Giuffre and Andrew reached an out-of-court settlement after she had sued him for sexual assault. A representative for Andrew did not immediately return the AP's request for comment. Nobody's Girl is distinct from Giuffre's unpublished memoir, The Billionaire's Playboy Club, as referenced in previous court filings and initially unsealed in 2019. Through Dowdy, Wallace says she began working with Giuffre on a new memoir in spring of 2021. Giuffre's name continued to appear in the headlines even after death. In July, Trump's book told reporters that Epstein had stolen Giuffre from a Mar-a-Lago, his club in Florida, where she once worked. She had alleged being approached by Maxwell as and hired as a masseuse for Epstein. Maxwell denied Giuffre's allegations. Doughty declined to provide details about the Epstein associates featured in Nobody's Girl, but confirmed that Giuffre made no allegations of abuse against Trump, who continues to face questions about Epstein, the disgraced financier, and his former friend. Nofta's statement says the book contains intimate, disturbing, and heartbreaking new details about her time with Epstein, Maxwell, and the many well-known friends, including Prince Andrew, about whom she speaks publicly for the first time since their out-of-court settlement in 2022. Giuffre's time with Epstein is well-documented, although her accounts have been challenged. She acknowledged getting details wrong, errors she attributed to trying to recall events from years ago. In 2022, she dropped allegations against Alan Dershowitz, saying in a statement at the time that she may have made a mistake in identifying the famed attorney as an abuser. Giuffre's co-author in her memoir, Wallace, is an award-winning magazine and newspaper reporter whose work has appeared in the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times, among other publications. She's also collaborated on two previous books, Pixar co-founder Ed Catmull's Creativity Incorporated and former General Electric CEO Jeff Immelt's Hot Seat. And now turning to sports. In addition to Arizona greats Tetrera McMillan and Randy Robbins being inducted into the Arizona Stadium Ring of Honor at halftime of the Wildcats season opener against Hawaii, U of A greats Jonas Savinea and Tyler Loop will be honorary captains before the game. Arizona head coach Brent Brennan revealed the Wildcats honorary captains during his coaches show at Union Public House on Monday evening. McMillan, Savinea, and Loop are recently a part of Arizona's four-player NFL draft class in April, which also included seventh-round running back Jacquery Krosky-Merritt, who's in line to have a prominent role in the Washington Commanders' backfield after they traded starter Brian Robertson Jr. In 5 years at Arizona, Loop recorded an 83.8% field goal rate, which ranks currently as 39th in college football history. It's also the best mark in Arizona history. Loop's 327 points are third in school history behind Max Sendejas of 360 and Art Lupino's 337. Loop was 6-for-9 in field goals of at least 50 yards in 2024, which included a program record 62-yard field goal. Loop owns the U of A single-game school record with 5 field goals against Texas Tech. He also made all 3 of his field goals and extra points in Arizona's win over Oklahoma in the 2023 Alamo Bowl. In his last 2 seasons at Arizona, Loop had 126 touchbacks in 140 attempts for 90% percentage. Loop was drafted by the Baltimore Ravens in the 6th round of the NFL draft, became the first Arizona kicker drafted since Nick Folk back in 2007. Loop is also the first ever kicker drafted in Baltimore Ravens history. He was named the starting kicker following his 5 field goal performance in the Ravens' 31-13 preseason win over the Dallas Cowboys. He made field goals from 29, 51, 42, 36, and 53 yards. His only miss was from 50 yards in the 4th quarter, but he redeemed his miss with a 53-yard field goal, which was his second longest field goal of the preseason. He made a 61-yarder in Baltimore's final preseason game at MT&T Bank Stadium. Savinea, who was drafted in the 2nd round by the Dolphins, played 3 positions on Arizona's offensive line between 2022 and 24. In 3 seasons at Arizona, Savinea played 2,418 snaps, including 1,057 at right tackle, 985 at right guard, and 345 at left tackle, according to Pro Football Focus. The Tafuna, American Samoa native, allowed 8 sacks and 5 quarterback hits in 3 seasons, according to Pro Football Focus. Savinea took over left tackle in 2024 once redshirt freshman Rhino-Tapa-Tutoi suffered a season-ending leg injury, but Savonnet missed the season finale against Arizona State due to a leg injury. He had played in the previous 36 games. The 6'5", 326 Savonnet is in line to start at left guard for the Dolphins this season. He received an 80.9 pass blocking grade for his final preseason game against the Jaguars. Savonnet's younger brother Julian is a 6'3", 280-pound defensive lineman for the Wildcats and is expected to be in the rotation on Arizona's defensive front. Both Savonnet brothers attended St. Louis School in Honolulu, which is a 10-minute drive from Clarence T.C. Ching Athletics Complex, the home stadium for the Rainbow Warriors. "Super excited for him to be back in town," Julian Savonnet said. "I haven't seen him since the draft party. I'm definitely stoked to see him again." Arizona kicks off the season against Hawaii on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. on TNT and HBO Max. Virgil Henderson is back at Catalina, ready to take on another challenge. The Trojans' new head football coach has returned to his alma mater with the goal of rebuilding the struggling program. "It's different compared to when I was in school in 87. It was more population, enrollment was higher. Now the enrollment is lower and the participation is low," Henderson said. "So it's just trying to get kids to get involved because a program that's so down for so long that every time we talk about it, no kids want to play because everybody wants to win, and unfortunately, the program's bad. I just want to change the culture right now, so it's taking some time." On Friday, the Henderson era at Catalina debuted with a 36-6 win at Santa Rita. The shorthanded Trojans jumped out to a 36-0 lead in the third quarter after leading 14-0 at halftime. Catalina has around 30 players but was limited due to ineligibility. "When I came out here, I was worried because as you look on the sideline, we had like 17 kids who had suited up. A lot of kids are ineligible," Henderson said. "So I was worried about our wind, our conditioning. When we got to the fourth quarter, are we going to withstand it? I knew we had to get a big lead because they've got some decent kids and that could hurt us. We're still learning." For sophomore tight defensive end Zaire Nash, who had a good bruising 36-yard touchdown run, the Trojans are off to a good start. "It was cool that he came back, helped fix the culture now," Nash said. "Look, we didn't win the first game last year. Now that he's here, what, first game? Yeah." Fellow Trojans players are also optimistic, especially given Henderson's history with the school. "I really like that he knows what we've been through," said junior running back, receiver, linebacker, cornerback Arian Holmes. "We've been through a curse. We just kept losing. Hopefully we can get up and win a streak this year." Henderson is Catalina's third head coach in the last 3 years. In the mid-1980s, Catalina played in 3A Division I, the highest level, against schools like Sunnyside, Tucson High, Canyon de Lora, and South Point Catholic. Now Catalina's enrollment is 628 in the AIA's current census. Rather than being placed in one of 2A South regions like other Tucson teams, the AIA put Catalina in the quasi-independent region with teams like Avondale State, John Paul II, and Peridot San Carlos. The Trojans are scheduled to play 9 games, 7 freedom games, and St. John Paul II and San Carlos in regional games. I'm thinking, man, the numbers, but then I keep an eye on forgetting that I'm in 2A now. So things are a little bit different, Henderson said. "We're in a region where independent region where we can build and just continue going strong. So I think it's just changing the culture and then building upon it." From Metro Louisiana, Spencer Rattler will be the New Orleans Saints starting quarterback when the club opens the regular season at home against Arizona, first-year coach Kellen Moore said on Tuesday. "He's just been consistent, he's made some really good decisions throughout his whole entire process, and his ability to make plays with his arm and his feet have certainly shown up," Moore said. "He's earned this opportunity. He's going to do a tremendous job for us." Moore also announced that versatile offensive and special teams play Transom Hill will start the season on the club's physically unable to perform list, along with tight end Foster Moreau. Both veteran players are coming off reconstructive knee surgeries. The quarterback decision came down to Rattler, a second-year pro out of South Carolina, and rookie Tyler Shough, a second-round draft choice out of Louisville. Each of the two quarterbacks passed for one touchdown and threw one interception during three preseason games. Shough also rushed for a touchdown. Rattler completed 69.8 of his passes and averaged 6.9 yards per completion. Shough completed 66.7 of his throws for an average of 6.2 yards per completion. From Houston, the Texans safety Jimmy Ward was placed on the commissioner exempt list on Tuesday as he faces a felony domestic violence charge. Ward may not practice or attend games while on the list. He had been on the physically unable to perform list because of a foot injury since before camp. He was arrested in June in Magnolia, Texas, on a felony charge of assaulting a family house member after a woman called authorities to say he had strangled and threatened her, according to police records. He was arrested again in August after violating his bail on that charge. From Santa Clara, California, the San Francisco 49ers receiver DeMarcus Robinson was suspended by the NFL for the first three games of the season for violating the league's substance abuse policy. Robinson was punished after pleading no contest last month to a misdemeanor DUI charge. He appealed the ruling, but ended having to serve the three-game ban. He will miss the games against Seattle, New Orleans, and Arizona. And coach Stephen Stefanski has selected Dylan Gabriel as a backup quarterback for Cleveland. The decision comes after Gabriel's strong performance in the final two preseason games. Atlanta added offensive tackle depth by acquiring Michael Jarrell from Seattle for a conditional 2027 seventh-round pick. And Buffalo Bills rookie cornerback Maxwell Hairston is opening the season on injured reserve, while being designated to return after missing the past month with a sprained right knee. The first-round draft pick has been sidelined since getting hurt during individual drills a week into training camp in July. And the Chargers. The Los Angeles Chargers acquired tackle Oscan Dekulis from the Texans, and the Chargers will send a 2027 conditional seventh-round pick to Houston. And that takes care of the reading of the Arizona Daily Star for Wednesday, 27th day of August. Mark DeGroft with you here. Thanks for tuning in. Have yourself a wonderful day and stay tuned for more programming. Thanks for listening.